Hey, this is Gary Parr, Editorial Director, Maintenance Technology Magazine. I'm back again with Sadi Kermani. And Sadi, welcome. Thanks for joining me again.
Thank you so much, Gary. It's been a real pleasure last time. Looking forward to this time.
Yes, our subject this time is cloud computing and cloud data storage. And just for those who might have missed our last podcast, Sadi is, we're just going to go technology evangelist. I think that's going to be it right there. Technology
evangelist.
But he's also a business development manager for industrial information management business at Schneider Electric. More than 13 years of experience in industrial automation, and is in his current role, he enables industrial customers and partners to realize the benefits of lower operational costs, optimize assets, and streamline processes through the use of advanced analytics, KPIs, and real-time access to industrial process data delivered through a set of online managed services. And all of that smacks of cloud computing, which is our subject, so you got to be the guy.
So, yes, sir. Driving the envelope there.
Yep. So, okay, so this, as I was saying to you before we started recording here, I just got back from the ARC conference. And at that conference, the first day for editors is an afternoon of listening to the latest and greatest from various companies. And a majority of the afternoon was spent listening to large companies such as Schneider talk about their cloud-based systems for asset management, data handling, Internet of Things, all of those things, all cloud-based. And obviously, that's where things are going. I mean, that's the business. If it comes to data and tracking what's going on in your plants, that's where the world is headed. And I'm sure dragging several people kicking and screaming, but that's where it's going. But then as I hear little comments and questions throughout the rest of the conference, I just have a sense that there are still a lot of people for whom cloud computing, software as a service, cloud data storage, data centers, there's a huge fear factor there, or at least I think a significant fear factor, maybe not as huge as it was 3-4 years ago. But I think there's still a fear factor that I'm putting my business information outside of my network, outside of my plant. Is that a smart thing to do? So I asked that question of you. Should that fear be there? Should there be just some caution? Are we getting to the point where it's really not a concern?
Yeah, so I think this topic has been very interesting as it's been evolving. Because I guess what I'm trying to say is that cloud technology and all that surrounds it, all of those buzzwords of being connected and that digital revolution, if you will, or digital transformation, right? It's been building up for some time now. But if you look at it in the context of a lot of the major shifts in technology throughout, you know, the human existence, it is something new that brings together a lot of opportunities, even new business models, right? New ways of living, new ways of working. And because it is something new with exciting new opportunities to do things differently, do things better, it does bring some risk along with it. But once the technology and the implementation of it and some of the collective experience behind implementing it and, you know, it was working with this kind of technology on a regular basis across multiple markets, verticals, customer segments, you know, that experience starts to come out. And there are some classic things that as a society that we start to do to kind of mature and therefore reduce or mitigate the risks associated with the technology so that we can, at the end of the day, move on by, you know, net conclusion, advancing ourselves and our capabilities while addressing correctly, appropriately, whatever risks exist. And so to get back to your point there, Gary, I think what's really critical when you look at what's happening here holistically and in the context of our history is that there are some elements of all of this talk. And by the way, Internet of Things is, you know, not far behind this conversation, right?
Right.
But if you think of just about cloud as just, you know, hey, here's the next thing that is super cool in our lives. And let's change the conversation then from it being fear-based, because fear-based is really an emotional thing, right? I mean, if you're freaked out by something, it's hard to know how to react to it, because it essentially speaks to the fight or flight instinct, right? It's like, what's around the corner? Cloud, run away, you know, like, so, but you know, that's not helpful. I mean, I can understand, I can empathize, you know, I get it. And you know, for those of you who are listening that still have a very strong cautionary, you know, stance against the cloud, I know some of that fear is rooted in a, you know, some catchphrase examples of, well, did you hear about, you know, such and such incident that, you know, there you go. It proves that it's not, you know, safe or secure or whatever. Well, you know, again, if you sort of eliminate the human emotion out of it and you start to recategorize or reframe the problem as not fear per se, but rather just what's the opportunity, what's the risk, what can I do to maximize the opportunity, and what can I do to mitigate you know, or reduce the risk. And by the way, just as a kicker to my answer here, there is cybersecurity insurance, by the way, right? So every single day we're confronted with potential hazards in our life, everything from just walking out the front door to getting into a car accident, right? To getting onto a plane or whatever the case is, right? I mean, there's just all kinds of crazy stuff going on. But, you know, we've built in within our society all kinds of protections that try to minimize things, keep things flowing, you know, keep the grease going on a regular basis. And then we also build in protections that address the just-in-case exceptional situations like insurance. One of the things that I'd like to consider all the listeners, to ask all the listeners to consider is, you know, cloud has even gotten to the point now where financial investors are starting to look at a company's ability to integrate cloud-based technology into their company as part of their criteria for evaluating the financial health of the company. Because what investors are starting to say is that cloud is here. It's a done deal. From a consumer standpoint, we've way past the tipping point. I mean, this is what we talk about with the millennials, or, you know, Generation Z, for example. These are sort of, you know, kids that grew up in a world where there's no such thing as pre-internet. I mean, it's like, you know, there was before PI and then there was like post-PI, right? It's like before the internet and after the internet kind of thing, right? So, you know, for them, it's inevitable it's going to happen. Now, in the commercial, industrialized, you know, business world, you know, we're not all just picking up whatever happens in the consumer world. There is a difference, absolutely. But like I was saying, this is starting to mature. We're starting to mitigate the risk. We're starting to address them very pointedly, right? And then, so from a company standpoint, you just essentially, here's my conclusion to all this. You just, in order to stay competitive, relevant, and, you know, to push on, if you will, and to take advantage of all the opportunities, and given the fact that it's a done deal from a consumer standpoint, and also largely from a business standpoint outside of industry, you know, that means there's an environment that is operating that is essentially there to enable sort of this last mile, if you will, right? Like the most critical aspect of, you know, our business or society's business, which is, you know, manufacturing. This is sort of the critical thing, or, you know, running utility grids, for example, right? Keeping the lights on, clean drinking water, right? All that infrastructure stuff. When you get to that critical stuff, you want to make sure that, okay, the technology has been beaten up enough that, you know, now it's time to sort of go into that. So all of that is happening. So I would say, go into it, take advantage of what it has to offer. But just like anything else, there is a level of risk. Absolutely. I wouldn't deny that, but just qualify it like you would any other risk as it pertains to your business, and then take the appropriate steps to, you know, partner with the right companies who can give you some technological assurance, you know, establish the right relationships to give you a level of assurance from a service deliverability standpoint, look into what insurance options that you have as well, right? You know, make it into a PR aspect that you are sort of, you know, becoming digitized and this is your future going forward and you're going to help your customers as well and you become a champion of it, right? So I think this is the way to react to that. Not fear, just, you know, rationally based, and then clearly, you know, sort of specified, you know, risk issues that you can address head on.
I love that phrase, the technology beaten up enough. I mean, I think we're at that point, if not beyond it. The technology is proven, and yeah, if you take the correct steps to protect yourself, you really don't have anything to worry about. One thing that I've watched as I sit through press conferences and presentations online and so on and so forth is the approach to cloud computing, which, you know, a couple of years ago even would be presented as this newish thing, this thing that is on the horizon or is at your doorstep and you need to look into it, to now when I hear presentations, it's, well, this is just the way it's going to, it's just the way it is. There's no, it's kind of a given that cloud computing and cloud-based systems and data management are a given. So, and to me, in just a very short time, the conversation has changed from look at this shiny new thing to this is the way it is, this is the way it's going to be, and here are all the wonderful things you can do to it, which of course addresses that get away from fear and start to look at the positive side of it. But I've just noticed that with each passing conversation that it's, folks, this is the way we're doing business. And if you want all these advantages, basically most companies can't even have them without using some kind of a cloud-based system. Unless you have a heck of an IT department, a lot of this functionality and power that is going to make your manufacturing and your business operate better, is just, you better have some pretty good programmers to pull it off.
Yeah. I mean, one thing I'll say, again, talking about beating up the technology at this point in 2017, you would literally have to spend more time, money, and effort in, rejecting or resisting or preventing some kind of cloud-based technology or sort of, you know, digital or digitized assets or endpoints than you would, you know, just trying to basically manage it correctly. I think it's really at that point. And another thing that just comes to mind as we're talking about it here is with all of the pervasiveness of all these digitally connected devices and sort of, you know, cloud services, nobody is actually saying that, hey, you got to radically change your business. That's not what it's about, you know, either, right? So there's an appropriate business case that justifies using cloud technology, right, to get an edge or to get some efficiency or to get some cost savings, right? But it doesn't mean that you have to stop doing or running your business, you know, entirely in one way and switch to another way. It's not about that at all. There's lots of small incremental things you can do. There's lots of mixed hybrid type architectures that you can deploy. So you can still retain, your sort of day-to-day business, but then start to say, you know, here's one thing we can do where we can save some money, or here's another thing we can do to help our workers be a little bit more independent and make decisions, you know, on their own, right? But knowing that they're doing it supported by the business because now they have access to certain information, right? Or here's how we can run our business faster by getting information to flow faster, right? Or become more coordinated, right? So that's how we should look at it. Just have a balanced perspective. And once we have a balanced perspective, you get the best of what it has to offer without unnecessarily overexposing yourself to whatever pitfalls exist. Because everything has a downside. But if you can mitigate it and show that you've taken all the responsible actions that anyone could expect you to, then as a business, that essentially is what allows you to continue to you know, run your business in that way and still take some chances.
Yeah, well, that's, yeah, those little victories, you know, set up a little project and have a victory there and learn from that. So you're not putting the whole company at risk,
right?
But you benefit, you learn from that. And yeah, then you're emboldened to move further. And it was a conversation I was having with someone last week about when it comes to reliability and maintenance people, that this kind of information, when we have these kinds of systems and we have the kind of data and data analysis that's available, it really puts the maintenance people in a much stronger position in terms of doing their jobs and making plants reliable, because they aren't relying on gut instinct. They aren't relying on, you know, I know this pump's going to break down in about 2 months because it always does. They have solid data behind them. They can make decisions. They can change out a pump, change out a valve, whatever it might be, to a better setup, because they have the data behind them, and it's all possible because of a lot of these cloud-based systems that collect the data, generate it, give you reports, give you a dashboard you can monitor. A lot of power there that really empowers, I think, it's probably the word, empowers reliability and maintenance people to move their jobs forward and start and contribute more and more to the bottom line. We talk about that all the time, is reliability people proving and demonstrating that they contribute to the bottom line. And this really does help them accomplish that.
Yep. And, you know, coming back to the opening question about fear, I mean, what if, let's look at a very practical scenario, especially in the maintenance domain, right? So the goal, like you were saying there, Gary, is to get the most out of that asset for the longest period of time, right? You're trying to get the biggest bang for the buck. So you know, most companies have some level of maturity in how they time, assess, or schedule those inevitable failures. And, you know, that's a whole other topic unto itself. But insofar as it relates to the cloud, one of the things that cloud computing is bringing, it's becoming a de facto business case, is this predictive asset analytics, right? So it's the ability to take operational data, you know, and historical data about a particular machine as it's running in your context, in your plant, and feed that to a set of hosted services that have sophisticated, you know, computing power and algorithms to crunch the data and try to spit out an anticipated point in time in which that machine, given its run rate, right, given the load and the demand that you're putting on it in your business, when is it going to need attention? When is the optimal point at which you should gracefully schedule a shutdown, you know, change a part, do some proactive maintenance, and then get that machine up and running again? Now, from a risk standpoint, if you are able to benefit from that advanced knowledge on a regular basis, you will be, you know, so much the better for it as a business. But for whatever reason, you know, like on a Monday morning, you expect to get the answer and it's not there, and you get it on a Tuesday, you know, that is not necessarily critical to the ability for your company to produce something, right? So what is the risk in having that, skipping a beat in that sense, right? And that's where it comes back to, you know, under what conditions are you starting to leverage some of these services? Are they really critical path to your business's capability of running? Because of course, worst case scenario, you could still go on a, you know, you could go on a schedule. You could almost fall back on what you would have scheduled otherwise. So, you know, you wouldn't be any worse off, right? You can only sort of be better off in that case.
Right. Yeah. It's, I get excited about what can be done, and this whole Internet of Things, it addresses, when we look at these software programs and cloud computing, it addresses that thing that has bothered me for so long, because, you know, the buzzword is Internet of Things, industrial Internet of Things. Look at all the data we can collect. But so many people, when you ask that second and third question about what they're doing with the data, how are they benefiting from it, the eyes start to glaze over, and they, you know, they start to break out the tap dance shoes, because they really don't know. And with this kind of capability, you can actually know what that data is telling you and actually implement it and use it to your advantage, rather than just collecting a bunch of numbers and letting them sit somewhere. And but you have to start small and dig in and make progress, and as you start to demonstrate those successes, then you'll see that the overall greater benefit. And it, the thing with a lot of this is the benefit goes beyond just the maintenance department. It gets into computing, the accounting department, purchasing department. They're all smarter and better off for this kind of capability in terms of what they do and how they do their business and how they track finances and shipping and ordering and all those things. So there's just a wide-reaching benefit that is much simpler and easier to handle.
Yeah, and, you know, just so that as people listening to this podcast can depend on our leadership here, Gary, let me give you 6 specific use cases where a combination of, you know, Internet of Things and cloud services and sort of this, you know, digitizing or connecting your assets to your staff, right? Let me give you 6 use cases that are solid and that are being proven out in the field, potentially by your competitors or by a disruptor. You know, this is another aspect to this whole conversation, which is the accessibility and the reduced time that it takes to get going with such advanced capability has become really, really quick. So that's where we have these startup companies that are now disrupting, you know, sort of the more longer established companies. So let's talk about these six things. One thing you can do once you start connecting assets or digitizing assets with your team is you can instantly get an increase in operational efficiency because you eliminate the lag in knowing what is the status of that piece of equipment. You know, previously you may have had to physically go out and physically inspect something. Now you can remotely do it. You can do it from, you know, that cliche line again, anywhere, anytime, any device. You can have multiple people actually do it in parallel. So you're also avoiding, you know, bottlenecks of, hey, one guy is responsible for doing it. And then once he does it, he has to tell a bunch of other people. You know, you can have all kind of this parallelism is one of these terms, right? It's just more people getting more stuff, you know, all in their own little individual work streams, right? So instantly understanding, how are you doing, right? How is your production goals going? How is your asset performing? How are you doing in your job? How can you do better in your job just by knowing what's going on instantly right now, right? So you can even course correct and influence the outcome as it's happening. So that's the first use case. The second use case is you can also improve your production capabilities because the minute that you find out that maybe something is not going as you would expect, the ability to create a virtual team. So there's another buzzword for this, which is swarming, right? It's completely challenging the traditional rigid HR structure. It's just, hey guys, I discovered that there's something wrong with this asset. I need you, 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 and you, who are all the relevant stakeholders, subject matter experts, you know, that guy that knows everything, you know, whatever the case is. You can get them together virtually in an ad hoc team. You know, you swarm them together. Everyone can work on it, share their ideas, their experience, you know, point to existing processes that might address that, and then just go execute it and do it, right? So you, again, you're eliminating the drag or the lag, right? That happens when something becomes a constraint on your production capabilities, you can address it and boom, you know, open up that flow of product, that flow of services, right, to your customers. That's the second use case. Third use case is when you do get something from the top floor, you know, the directors or the big boys, or whatever the case is, the management team, and they're like, hey, we have to make a million widgets. Well, instantly that information can get translated into the right context, right, to all the right people. So everyone knows, okay, you know, instead of having to wait for something to come on top and then I have to log into some system and then I have to coordinate. I mean, the more you can automate that in some kind of trusted, you know, digitized, auditable, you know, verifiable, right, workflow enforced kind of sequence of events, then the faster that everyone can just get on the same page, know what to do, do it, punch it out the door, and then on to the next order. And, you know, thinking about eliminating the drag, if you haven't detected, I'm picking this like flying example here, all my answers, right? I mean, you have a customer that just clicked a button on your website saying, I want that, right? So because things are getting so fast, let me just take a sidestep here for a second. Because it's getting so fast, this ability to know what to make and to execute on it and punch it out the door, well, a whole new business model has come into play, which is mass personalization. So mass industrialization was all about taking what we wanted to make. And, you know, Henry Ford is like, you can get this car in any color you want, as long as it's black, right?
Right.
So you just punch it out. But now, because we have the ability to react so quickly, we can get customers to go on a website, design or slightly modify with colors or logos or whatever the case is, your product with some specialization, and then you have the production flexibility to accommodate that. So you can punch it out the door very quickly on spec. Okay, so that's a third use case. Fourth use case is just this whole layer, as I've been talking about over and over again, of overhead, whether that's administrative or IT or from a project implementation standpoint or maintenance or monitoring or the sort of the management of the solution, just sort of minimize that whole layer, you know, by outsourcing essentially, you know, some of that overhead to a vendor or a partner whose sole purpose in life is to become an expert in doing just that. And for that reason, that motivation, that's their business model, that's their specialization, that's what they do, they've become extremely lean and highly sophisticated and highly automated and consistent in being able to do that. So that allows you as the manufacturer or, you know, heavy process manufacturer to basically focus on your niche and your specialty, right? So that's another thing that happens when you sort of outsource some of these capabilities. The fifth use case is to lower production variability. So once you understand how you are producing something on a regular basis, and you can start to capture information about it, certain metrics or production goals or KPIs, and then you can start baselining that from production line, production cell, a site, a region, you know, even country to country, then you can really figure out, you know, where are you able to execute the best? Who needs the most help? How can you normalize that, you know, production output so that it's more consistent, more template driven? And then that raises the overall experience of doing business with you as a company, and that leads to more sales and higher customer satisfaction and so on, right? Because you have a very highly predictable model. All right, last one that I have for you, certainly not the last one that exists, but last one I have for you off the top of my head is monitor and align regulatory compliance. So a lot of the times as a business, you have to stay you know, within certain regulatory, you know, frameworks. You have certain laws to respect. And so again, back to the first one, which is just knowing what's going on right now, you can also monitor, you know, are you always staying within your regulatory compliance? And if you're not, then the second use case was you can address it instantly. And then you also have a, you know, digital trail of what led up to that problem. You have a digital trail of how long it took for you to recognize there was a problem. Then you also have a trail of who did what to fix it. And then you can even add in, you know, what are you going to do to prevent it from happening again? But all of that is just baked right into the system. So even if you didn't know that this was a use case, just by virtue, as a byproduct of digitizing all these things and having the right solutions in place, you know, this is another benefit. So there you go. Those are, you know, it's not pie in the sky stuff. This is literally what other companies are doing right now.
The one that stood out for me in those six was the personalization, because from a maintenance perspective, the minute I hear that we just got an order for 1,000 red boxes, we're running that process right now and we're getting blue, and you know, they're due tomorrow. And that says to me that puts a different kind of pressure on the maintenance and reliability department, in that it isn't we're running black Model Ts, no matter what color they wanted, we're running black Model Ts. And so if we stop because we ran out of wheels, then that's okay because it's still black, or we ran out of black paint, you know, whatever it might be. But if you're doing a personalization thing, there's this added pressure, because when you say personalization, that also means short deadline, quick runs, all those little things that need to be set up and torn down because you got the next one coming up. And so that puts more pressure on the maintenance department to make sure that is able to happen. And therefore, the more data they have and the better they're able to predict performance, the better off they're going to be, because firefighting from a maintenance perspective almost is not an option.
Right. Exactly. I mean, can you imagine if something happens? So here's the flip side of the industrial aspect of you know, cloud computing, right? Is the consumer side. And we all know what the consumer side is. You know, some random thing happens in society, it hits the news, or it hits Twitter or Facebook, it becomes a hashtag campaign, and boom, it's a social phenomena. And what ends up happening is, for manufacturers and for companies, it's I don't know what's the right way to say this, but there's a kind of unspoken challenge of, you know, hey, companies, get in the ring. Who's going to pounce on this and take advantage of it and start, you know, selling whatever that thing was that appeared at that moment, because everyone is crazy over it? How are you going to get in on that and monetize and leverage that? And it might be a short run, but, you know, you can make a whole bunch of money just because of something, you know, that happens. So instead of red boxes, it could be, you know, red sweaters. It could be funky bagels, you know, it could be Greek yogurt, you know, I mean, just somebody decides that something's healthy, something isn't, suddenly like, whoa, you know, we can't have that label on our food anymore. And you have to change it up, right? But that's exactly what happens. If you miss that opportunity, because you're not set up for that level of agility, right? Then you won't be able to respond to the market and you'll just miss out. And we're literally talking potentially millions of dollars of revenue in that case.
Right. And that's and that could be gone in 6 months, that opportunity gone. And yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then you sit there in a meeting wondering how it is that you're not able to take advantage of that. And that, yeah, that's frustrating. Yes. Yeah. All right. We're going to run out of time here, Sadi, and I wanted to talk about data centers. Mm-hmm. You know, as we talk about cloud computing and storing company information offsite, and so the question is going to come up, where am I storing it? How do I know it's safe? How do I do some due diligence so that I can sleep at night? And here a couple of days ago, you threw at me this concept of a cloud access security broker. Mm-hmm. And so talk about the cloud access security broker, but then also about the different types of data centers or different concerns that we might have in evaluating a data center, or evaluating somewhere where my data is going to be stored or handled or whatever you do with it.
Sure, sure. And in fact, let me just address an earlier point, Gary, that you and I had suggested that we address here, which is, you know, what is the way in which companies must validate or, you know, check on who is the right person to access the data? How do I protect access to my data? You know, what is the dimension by which I get that confidence that the right people are accessing the right data? And, you know, in the past, we talked about how companies had a network. And in our last podcast, we talked about the perimeter network and how all you had to do is protect the perimeter. And the perimeter, if you look at that word, simple English word, the perimeter was really based on a geographical idea that, you know, the industrial control network or the process control network was over there, and that's where it lives and that's where it stays, and anything connected to it is physically in that network. And we quickly talked about how, you know, that's not true again today. You know, the geographical location of a person trying to get access to data is a very fluid idea. I could be at the machine. I could be using a terminal services connection remotely to the machine. I could have a mobile device. If that machine is pushing data to the cloud and access the cloud, it's like, well, where am I? So one of the things I want to bring up very quickly is a lot of companies have to recognize that that kind of geographically pinned concept of a security perimeter doesn't exist anymore. And rather, what everyone is moving to is sort of identity-focused authentication, right? So it's more about who you are and less about where you are, right? And then with that being kind of our pillar here, once you have a person's identity and they can use a whole range of services and devices and form factors to get access to the things that they need, well, very quickly what starts to happen is you blow way past should we do cloud or not do cloud, but you end up in a, you know, kind of a, if I can say it this way, like a multi-cloud, multiverse scenario. So once you embrace this idea of cloud services to help accelerate taking advantage of certain capabilities, you quickly end up with, I have multiple vendors who are providing multiple cloud services. Some are sanctioned by IT. Some my employees are using without my knowledge, where, you know, everything is encrypted, which is, by the way, everything should be encrypted. So that's the first thing for you to check.
Yeah, there's item one, isn't it?
Right, right. But, you know, even with encryption, right, even with encryption, it's not the end all. It's not the solution. So, by the way, back to the fear, you know, if somebody comes up to you and says, yeah, all of our data is encrypted and, you know, okay, well, that's it. Thank you very much. I've done my job. No, that's not the case. That is necessary prerequisite, but it doesn't stop there, right? So even if everything is encrypted, I can still, you know, encrypt it. I can still share a document with somebody with a link, right? And as long as nobody else has that link, I'm fine. But that's a huge assumption. How can I ensure that what I'm sharing, the access to that, you know, is given to the right person or and is protected and so on? So what's essentially happened is once you accept that you're going to deal with, you know, multiple vendors that have multiple cloud services that you have to manage, what's sort of come out in the IT consumer market and increasingly in the business market now is what you talked about here, Gary, this cloud access security broker. And essentially what it is a software combined with some hardware usually, where you start to monitor all the traffic that is going through your network, and then also to tag where is it going. And using, because here's the interesting part, a lot of the times you get these cloud access security broker services as a cloud-based service in of itself, okay? And the reason why that's significant is because what they're trying to do is, just by throwing massive amount of computing power and algorithms, they're trying to anticipate that for every employee that's trying to go out the corporate network into some, you know, internet-bound destination, hopefully, because of the, you know, the hive, right, the collective intelligence of everyone on the internet, you know, just using all these sort of common services, the chances are I know what that service is. I know what the flow of data typically looks like, right? I know sort of the frequency of access. I can tell what is a normal transaction versus what isn't. You know, I may be able to extend my on-premise corporate network security policies to some of those cloud-based security policies as well, right? So it's just a stretching of your boundaries where you can still put some degree of control you know, over the data flow and the nature of that data flow from your network to all these cloud services. So in this scenario, you're getting visibility, some oversight across multiple cloud vendors while having the ability to put in some monitoring, some standardization, and some security controls that are specific to your company. So it's not the wild, wild west. And as a result, your employees are much happier because they have the freedom to use many of these cloud services. And the IT department of companies, manufacturing or not, they feel better because now they have a sense of visibility and control over what's flowing in and out and what's going where, right? So that's kind of where this technology comes into play. And then a quick little spin-off idea from there is once you start thinking about multi-cloud, you also have to think about how as a company you can interface with multiple cloud vendors. And that's where we start talking about, again, that security pillar where you move your, typically most companies have an on-prem Microsoft Active Directory, right? Identity Access Management Solution, IAM, that's the buzzword there. So when you extend that to the cloud, that cloud-based Active Directory, or I should say cloud-based identity management solution, generically that's what it is. An example of that is Microsoft Azure Active Directory, but there's others like Ping or Okta or, you know, and a few others. But that becomes your single point of authentication for all these cloud services to interact with your company and then get authenticated to make sure your employees are having the right access. And then to talk about the data center. So once you start partnering with companies that offer these cloud services and they start to become custodians of your data, and I'll emphasize that word, right? I mean, every company that you do business with that is a cloud service provider, you should make sure that they take the approach that it is always your data, you own it, you have the rights to it, you retain control over it, you can get it back at any time, you can revoke access to it, you can, you know, delete your account, you have the right to be forgotten, to be very specific, right? So that's exactly how the relationship should be. So all these companies
that's really an important point there. When you're setting up these arrangements, you need to read the fine print. You need to understand, because somebody else is going to be holding your data and you need to make sure you can get it back. you say emphasize it. Yeah. I think that really takes a little bit of a spotlight in terms of knowing what your arrangements are with these outside vendors. That's got to be significant legally, accounting wise, all kinds of ways.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. So, you know, again, new technology, new things to learn. It's something new to learn but you have your due diligence never changes, right? If they come out tomorrow with, you know, some super great technology, the first thing I'm going to say is, I'll take two because I don't want a single point of failure, whatever it is, right? And the second thing is, let me understand the fine print, right? How does it actually work? Yeah, so just to cap that point, right? So if they are custodians of your data, you absolutely want to do a little bit of investigation into qualifying who this company is and what are their capabilities in safeguarding, you know, being your proxy, essentially, right? And so that's where coming full circle to the beginning of this conversation about how the technology has been beaten up. And now we have standards and we have, you know, governing bodies that are talking about best practices, right? We have certifications. So you should be checking that these data centers, first and foremost, have these certifications, that they've met these sort of best practice requirements, that they're involved or participating members in standards that are setting the stage for how everyone collectively should operate so that we have some consistency. And there's a couple that are very easy, you know, like, so SOC 2, SOC 3 has just now come out. And I may have talked about this in the last podcast. There's a vendor agnostic, vendor neutral organization called the Cloud Security Alliance. You can go check them out. They have a wonderfully a complex spreadsheet, actually, which gives you just all the questions to ask, right? So there's lots of information out there to help you understand the questions you should be asking. But, you know, certifications is really the simplest, quickest way to just assess whether the data center you're trusting is up to snuff.
We're going to have to stop, Sadi. Darn it.
It happened again, Gary.
I got 100 other questions. We're just going to have to stop. So, all right. Well, appreciate it. That's all very enlightening. I think this this cloud computing thing, especially as it matures and weaves itself into companies and becomes part of their literally part of their fabric, it's going to be interesting. It's going to be interesting on two fronts to see that people do the due diligence. Then to see the tremendous benefit that I think will come out the other side for so many companies. And I particularly think about small and mid-sized companies who don't always feel like or don't always literally have the resources that the larger companies have to take advantage of some of this technology. And to me, this cloud computing and some of these programs and software offerings that are available are really going to open some doors for small and mid-sized companies. And when you talk about personalization, help those smaller companies, which tend to be more agile in general, to really shine and deliver on these things and carve out a niche for themselves. And then I look at it from the maintenance perspective, just being able to do, to show up for your shift or to look at a day ahead of what needs to be done in terms of predictive maintenance and just regular maintenance, and to have hard data that you can point to and say, look, this asset is starting to show signs of trouble. We need to go fix it now before it collapses the whole operation. And to be able to do that with confidence rather than walking around and listening, I guess, which for so many is such a powerful tool. But when you look at that approach with the aging workforce, you know, a lot of that experience is walking out the door. Those guys who can walk around and tell whether a motor is in trouble or not, those guys are walking out the door. And to replace them is just darn tough. So to have hard data that you can rely on and look at every day is going to be essential and certainly powerful.
Yeah, the machine whisperers are leading the building.
That's right. Yeah. Well, you know, that's a knack, but that's years and years of experience to be able to do that. And those people are retiring and got to replace them with something that's reliable. So,
right. Yeah. So closing comment for me is, you're not alone, right? So for anyone listening to this podcast, appreciate the time, talked about a lot of things, but you're not alone. There are partners that you can work with to sort of, you know, get to the bottom of all these different parts of the exciting times that we live in. But I would just encourage you, though, to take that first step, you know, start incremental, start small, but start now, and then, you know, partner with the right people like Schneider Electric, and you'll be able to do it.
All right, Sadi, appreciate the time, the insights, the knowledge, and thanks to everybody for listening.